Britain. She was a literature teacher and a history teacher. She was curator of diverse exhibitions. She conducted projects in gender. She worked as a journalist and as a freelance writer. And now, well, she is at the CEU, at the OSA archives.
No, it's not an enviable task to talk. So I try to be as short as possible because I know everybody is kind of bored. But
Not bored.
Not bored. I would say tired. Okay. But I'm glad that archives is a concept and an issue came up several times during the day. So the long-term preservation is a serious problem in open access to women, as I see now, and embedded digitization. So we finally get to archives because I think that's the role of the archives somehow to preserve the long term. So I would like to go back to our original thought. I know that we try to go around this concept of intellectual outreach, and some of us kind of are viewing the concept that it exists with collaboration, contribution, but I really believe that exists and we can build on this kind of collaboration, and we can somehow create good content, quality content, digital content, and make this information available for the broader public. What about archives in general? How I see that archives can fit into this publishing, open access movement, digitization, how archives can react to this kind of issues. I guess you all have some kind of concept of what archives means. If you've never been to an archive, at least you connect it to a kind of boring and dusty place. You know, there are records put aside and shelved, and nothing is happening. Well, nowadays the concept is quite changing. There are really challenges, and the world is changing, and archivists are also realizing that they have to find their way in this, the new trends and the digitization. And I believe that the important thing which we have to state always, that archives and libraries should provide unhindered access to their content. This is important because we are all kind of guardians of the public content. And this we kind of keep forgetting, you know. I don't know how about the librarians, but I know the archivists in Hungary or in Eastern European countries, they really believe that the records and are theirs. And they sit on the information and they don't want to share. This is a crucial concept when we talk about archives. So I also believe that for education and for educational use, with the help of the technology, for the sake of the research community, we kind of have to change the paradigm, the way we work in archives. Nowadays, the European scholarship is pretty much going online. There's a lot of ongoing research, and there is a fear, and there's a chance that somehow archives are stepped over, and primary resources are not used for research. This is a tendency. I actually work at the university as well, and I work with the students, and they come to archives, and they really don't know, even an MA or PhD students, what the primary source means. They always rely on secondary sources, which is a serious problem. They never go back to the primary source. They keep citing secondary sources, but you know, they sometimes at the PhD stage they read archives and read records. Which is a shame. I mean, they should go back to primary sources and try to analyze and critically, you know, look at the records which they find in an archive. So I believe that nowadays the primary sources, this is my argument, is kind of underutilized. And this is not the fault of the research community, not the fault of the new generation, it's the fault of the archives, primarily. I think somehow archives are reacting much slower to technology change compared to librarians. I really admire librarians, they are pretty well organized. Yes, you are. They move much faster, they digitize, they have lots of content already accumulated, and somehow the archives are always left behind. But there is a reason. You should should know about an archive that when we create an archive, it works in a different way as a library. We organize it in a context, which is important to keep the context for the information. So it's not enough to put the publication on the shelf and then you can nicely catalog, put everything in a database and search. In case of an archive, you have basic principles which you have to follow. The first one is the original holder. The second one is provenance. Provenance means that you have to keep the records of one person or organization together in that. Then you have to pay attention to that you are carrying the authenticity of the records, which is also crucial, integrity, preservation, privacy, copyright, not always, this is not typical, mostly privacy, secrecy. So there are many restrictions, you know, in this field, which you kind of have to cope with, you know, on a daily basis when you work in an archive. So it's not easy, because even if I digitize, you know, archive or content, I have to sanitize information. I have to pay attention that when I digitize, it's not enough to digitize in a PDF or a JPEG in a compressed format, but I'm digitizing always in a long-term master copy. I have to set up the infrastructure, then I have to set up the other infrastructure. So there are a couple of things to cope with. On the other hand, there is an enormous need from the research community that they would like to get online records. So, especially students, the new generations, trying to get more and more digital information, not primary ones, everything which they find on the internet. If they would find more primary records, they would use it actually. That's the situation. So, we decided that we kind of set up a new model for archiving. We do not really, we try to keep the traditional way of archiving and keep things as traditional archivists do, and we build another layer of archive, which is pretty much based on collaboration, individual contribution, Web 2.0 tools, so all kinds of new technology which can be helpful for the new generation.
What researchers usually want?
They don't care about institutional repository. They don't care about metadata. They believe that they don't care. But if they would find the bad metadata about information, they do care. So there are many things, you know, which seem like not really important for someone doing research, but metadata, for instance, is crucial. You know quite well that if you, regardless of full text version, I'm sorry, full text is not everything. Full text is just one aspect. You have to have a good metadata. And it's hard to get a good metadata if you ask individuals to put information on digital records. You always kind of mix the two and you try to gather as much metadata as possible. They don't care about open source software, unfortunately. This is a serious problem. They don't care about open standards, formats. They want, you know, real access and they want to have control over their products and so forth. What is the new digital distribution model? There's a free information exchange, cooperation, open access, collaborative archiving, new kinds of archives, YouTube and everything. These are the buzzwords, you know, and recent trends. There is rights management, creative commons, open knowledge infrastructure, we all know these kind of issues. But there is a third one, which is kind of under-evaluated in terms of interoperability of the systems and open standards. What is an open standard? Everybody talks about openness. This is a word people keep exchanging. Everybody talks about open source, open. We don't know what it means, you know. We can call something an open format and it's not an open format. That happens quite often. I mean, PDF is not an open format, I'm sorry. Please don't call it an open format. PDF is a proprietary format, and since it belongs to one, you know, company vendor. Open standards are, or open formats are derivated from open standards. The internet is full of open standards. That's why we use internet, because there are open standards, thanks to God. There wasn't any authority who developed the standard. There was a collaboration. The whole internet is based on collaboration and collaborative standards. This is the definition of the open standard. I'm not going to bore you with reading the definitions. But there is definitely, there are a couple of new developments nowadays. If you want to have your archive, your digital information, please use open document format. It's based on XML. It can really help you to save the information and platform independent. What is the social impact? It's a very important social impact if you are using open format. First, you guarantee a long-term access. So this is the job of the archives, but also the public institutions or governments or anybody who is dealing with the citizens' money and content, our content. Doesn't matter if you are a private user, you can use any software, it's your choice. But you, if you are spending the state budget, please pay attention. Or if you're a library and an archivist, this is a crucial issue. Platform independent, which means that it does not really put you in data logging and you're not depending on a vendor. You don't have to buy a license for a software, which is crucial. And of course, contrasting, this is more like a philosophical approach, but I believe it's there. That if you give the chance, if you explain to people that they can use OpenOffice and Microsoft in between the two, that's important. You don't have to tell which one is the good one, they have to choose. But they should know about that exists another solution. Just knowing about the choice, I think that's important. Okay, let's skip this. Open content, it's interesting. I'm skeptical about open content. If nowadays, everybody says that it's open content, then it becomes closed content. That's kind of a tendency. I'm sorry for saying that, but I only see the guarantee if there are really public institutions who are guarding the access to information. They can provide probably offer open content. Usually there is a big vendor or anybody behind a digitization project. At the end, something is happening, they close the content and you don't have full access. What is the role of the archive? So we have to provide a reliable long-term access. We have to accept the responsibility for the long-term maintenance of digital resources, and we have to meet organizational, curatorial, and operational responsibilities. These are issues which we have to handle on a daily basis. Sustainability, content, these are really serious challenges for a traditional archive. System, standards, access, content, sustainability, and of course the professional change. There are several tools you can test your repository, how to become like a trusted digital archive. There are several repository solutions which you can use when you deposit digital objects in a online database, e-prints, these space, I don't want to talk about these solutions. I don't think they are adequate solutions for long-term archiving. These are databases for collecting research publications, but not for real long-term archiving. There is another solution called Fedora. That's probably a better recently developed, and there is a huge team behind who helps the development process. So if you're really interested in and you want to have like a serious software, open source software for archiving, I would recommend Fedora, not DSpace or eprints. We tried DSpace, we're using DSpace, and it's that's what I'm talking about because it was our pilot to see how it works as a real institutional repository. We are still using it for archiving the Soros foundations all over the world. So it's like an online archive. We are not satisfied with the structure. It's very rigid. It's hard to customize and it's not modular. So I wouldn't use this for long-term presentation. Digital archive will continue. This is an interesting concept, how to enter into the research process. What to do to capture, to attract researchers, how to build our archive, a digital archive, in such a way that they will come and they will visit us and they can really benefit from our digital content. So we started an experiment. The experiment is called the Parallel Archive. And we decided that we're not going to replace digital repositories and real archives. We built another layer on the top of this. This archive is a folksong-based archive. It's not done, or it's based on a collaborative model. What we noticed when we are serving researchers, many researchers come to our archive or any other places, and they use their cameras, they use their own equipment, or they online order for scans. There's a lot of digital content generated in terms of research. Then these people write their papers, they keep on their desktop, and they don't know what to do with this digital information. They can't even store this information. So we started from this very practical issue, where to store digital content, which is not good for real long-term preservation, but really useful for research and for community, for just using the information which is already there. And we thought that it would be nice to have a collaborative archive, which kind of focuses on your base. It's really responds to individual and community needs. It's not a hierarchy of structure. It has thematic collections based on sharing, and offers the possibility of fixed URL. By the way, everybody talks about the citation difficulty. It's not a big deal. It's a question of fixed URL. I mean, we introduced this long time ago in the digital repository. There's a general registration process when you can get a fixed URL for a website, so you can cite it very nicely when you have a digital object online. So we would offer a preservation service to the individuals. It's multilingual, cross-disciplinary. It's based on a new business model, and it enhances visibility. So it sounds good. These are the constraints and challenges. Folks only usually do cows. This we know quite well. Tagging, tags are not as useful as good metadata, descriptive data. We lose the context for our carbon records. We need huge preservation capacity if we start acting as internet archive. There are technology issues, obsolete technology, migration, language barriers, legal issues. These are the most serious problems. Not even the copyright or privacy. It's more like archival legislation. That's what I mentioned in the morning, that sometimes the local archival legislation actually prohibits the distribution of scans. Sustainability, lack of best practices, so that you don't get a good quality digital content. So how to deliver the archival content to the publisher? This is part of sustainability. So we did develop a system. Actually, it's already running. I'm not going to show it to you on the live. It's just a big screen part of the system. We are in the test phase now, and we have a couple of research communities who are actually contributing with content. They're depositing their records at this archive. They can tag, share, annotate. There is no constraint. They don't have to share. They can keep information private. But then, after 2 years, they have to share. This is the moment. We offer free OCR, which is a big thing, I believe. They without any constraint. And they can themselves correct their OCR text. So here is this document, this UN document. There is a way that the system automatically OCRs the text, and the owner of the document can work on the text version and improve the quality. At the end, the system generates a double-layered PDF and it becomes a searchable one. But of course, we keep everything in Excel as well. This is the repository. And the workspace, the private workspace, that's it. So the plan is basically that we would like to offer this system to the community. We really don't want to sit on and moderate and use any censorship. The only the infrastructure we offer We have a couple of institutes who would like to cooperate and create a consortium behind. We're releasing the version, the first 1.0 version in 2010, and we would like to have localized versions. And of course, we would like to have release the source code, make it an open source system. This is the plan. I don't know how it works. Thank you.
Thank you very much.